On the agenda for today, you know, Cassius, you just tricked up the chicken. You want to finish off what we did.
Chicken?
You just tricked up your kitchen. We're going to finish off what we spoke about 2 weeks ago. We spoke about 6 hours, the sources for people who wait 1 hour, 3 hours, five and a bit, 5 and a half, and 6 hours, the positive, negative, benefits, sources, problems, and cheetos. We have a little bit more to talk about from that Simon and Pace Sassaniradea. And then we're going to get into the big discussion, really, really important in the Maisa, of not bar not. I think I've already had four or five, well, we'll explain what that means, what exactly is not bar not. I've already had four or five people come up to me in the base medrash with their fancy Nancy YU cup, say that I used this for hot chocolate this morning, and now I'm on Fleishik, lunch was chicken, can I drink hot tea in this mug? Can I drink cold water in this mug? Can I use this mug at lunch while I'm eating Fleishik? A lot of questions, so we're going to try to deal with some of these questions. That's going to be our main topic for today. So just a short note on Minhagim. We spoke a lot about last week about the family Minhagim, changing Minhagim, things like that. So I spoke to Rav Asaf Benarsh, the one I learned all these halachos from last year when we did Yorshei and Nefa. And I asked him just generally about Minhagim switching within 3 hours, 6 hours, things like that, and then Minhagim in general. So specifically about switching, let's say, from a more makel amount of time to a more maskil amount of time. So Ben Arsh thought, and this is important to know in general, that the first question you're always going to address when you're dealing with Minhag is family sensitivity. So let's say you came to yeshiva and you feel like you want to become more maskil halacha, and you know that maybe your family picked up a specific minhag, as an example, that's used 3 hours, waiting 3 hours between meat and milk, because they didn't really have a strong mitzvah that seems to be a little bit more convenient, and like there are good from Jews out there who hold only 3 hours, so like, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. You realize maybe that's not where my family was from originally, it doesn't really fit, we're not yucky, why are we holding 3 hours? And you want to know, can I switch to 6 to 5 and a half, something a little bit more mocking? So Ben-Har said the first thing you need to think about is, well, how is your family going to react? How is your father going to respond to that? If it's going to create any sort of tension, or if the feeling of you're firmer than I am, or like my Masorah, in quotes or not in quotes, is not good enough for you, anything like that, you're going to lose much, much more than you gain. It's not worth switching. You can revisit the question when you get married, when you set up your own house, when you're kind of like the master of your own domain, then you can start making those decisions, but definitely while you're still kind of under your father's jurisdiction, still in your father's house, even though in yeshiva, we're in yeshiva for our entire years, it's still biblina, you could say, under your father's jurisdiction. So if it's going to cause any sort of dogma separation, if you feel like he hurt or insulted, it's not worth it. If you feel that he is neutral, or it wouldn't be a problem, you can maybe have that conversation, it wouldn't be an issue, then there's also a very practical thing to consider, that let's say you guys have, like it happened on Shabbos, let's say you guys have your meat meal, and then it's a relatively short Shabbos, so 4 hours after you finish your meat meal, now it's Shalosh Shedes time, and your family pulls out cheeses and lasagna, whatever it is, and they're sitting down for Shalosh Shedes. And if you took on 6 hours, just practically you can't sit down to eat with them anymore. Is that, or how are they going to take that, just practical reality? Is that going to create tension? Is that going to create problems? Again, if yes, you're not worth it, save that switch until you're kind of setting up your own schedule in your own house, you got married, things like that. But if that's going to be a problem, again, avoid the switch. If you think you can avoid the emotional issues, if you think that you'll avoid, there won't be a problem with like any just practical issues, then there's what to talk about, could be worth going for. Ravenner actually said he's more likely to encourage somebody who holds 5 and a bit to 5 and a half. He does not encourage anybody switching an argument. If somebody were to ask him, should a person switch or not, he'd be more likely, and this is surprising, he'd be more likely to encourage switching from 5 and a bit to 5 and a half to 6, than he would encourage switching 3 to 6. Even though it seems counterintuitive, we pointed out last week, the sources for 3, or at least the backing, the Masorah, for 3 hours goes way back to Yaki, Germany, and it's held very, very commonly in England, Europe, whatever it is, whereas 5 and 5 and 1, 5 and a half, only really became prevalent in the past 50, 60 years. It really wasn't discussed, it's not really found in Masorah going back before that. So it seems like 3 hours is a much stronger basis, at least in the Jewish practice, from the 5 and a bit, you'd be more likely to encourage somebody to switch from that one. But in general, he doesn't encourage switching, just to have that in mind. But Yosef,
is there anything with And you started to think, well, when I'm alone, like when I'm in yeshiva, or to do six, and when I'm with my family to do three, is there any, like, even, or is there just like totally ridiculous what I've got to do?
It's a good question. I would assume yes. You have to keep in mind. You have to keep in mind when you wait 6 that you're not doing this as a kriyas minhag or as a stimulative status of a neder, in which case you can't just go back and forth. But just as a practice, I assume it's, I guess, admirable that it is positive you do gain something from that. But you can make sure that it's not taken out as a full-fledged minhag, because then you have the problem of nidar and hathar and nidar and things like that.
Good. Yeah,
right. So we mentioned it last time, that is surprisingly built into many different yeshivas, and it seems to be based on as long as you're within 5.5, as long as you're more than 5.5 hours, you're getting the Rambam, you're getting the Meiri, plus it's the scheduled time, which seems to be what Maruko was talking about in the Gemara, right? So, it is funny, but yeah, you're right. So, yep.
Is it better to wait just into the 6 hour than 5.5? Is there really a difference? Meaning, the whole thing is 5.5 or 5 1 minute into the
5 hour.
So there's a real difference between 5.5 to
decide
if you're happy to do that hour.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Ravania was more okay with the actual 5.5. Maybe like Rove gets it to 6, or maybe that's presumably what the Rambam meant when he said Kamoshesh, not just like one in, but more close to 6. We mentioned one star, and maybe they just didn't have clocks back then, so it was harder for them to get the exact 6. But really, he meant you should be waiting in the area of 6 hours, and 5.5 basically gets you there. Yeah.
What do you think
that starts doing for the Minhagim? No, it does. There are certain cases where if you're changing Minhagim, then you need to go through a Tzarshu Dharm first. It depends on what your thought process was when you took on the neder. They talk about it with like kiddush and brachas. It is when like it's really discussed kind of mainstream. If you thought that it was a full-fledged halacha when you took it on, or when you kind of bought it with your family, then I think we say you would need. Sorry, the other way around. If you knew that it was a minhag when you took it on, then you would need hasharas nedarim. If you thought that this was like a full-fledged real-life halacha, which it turns out like either it was a minhag or maybe even mistaken, as you say, like a breast maybe, then you might just be able to switch, worth checking with your rabbi first before you make any big decisions. Right? Once we're on the subject of minhagim, this is my favorite minhag story. If anybody doesn't know, my wife is Sephardi. So she's a Syrian, and our first Pesach married, we were going to spend at with my wife's family in Brooklyn. So obviously a lot of problems, the main one being kiddush. They rebel in the fact that they get to eat rice over Pesach, the whole thing. You have to check it before grain 3 times, it's just a hassle, but like, hey, you get to eat rice, you get to eat chickpeas, it's food, it's like a whole different world, it's like a different Pesach. So the question that I went to Mordechai Willig with was, am I allowed to like eat anything in their house? Is Caleb going to be a problem? How am I supposed to manage this? So he said, number one, off the bat, Caleb is not a problem. Don't eat rice. That's the main thing he needs to do. Don't eat the actual kiddush himself. But the bleo's not going to be an issue. Plate's not going to be an issue. Things like that. And then, kind of like token in the conversation, he said, like, obviously you're not gonna make your wife take on gebrach. So like, that would be too much of a switch, kiddush and gebrach. So then, not eat kiddush and not eat gebrach. Either that'd be ridiculous. So I said, like, actually, my family minhag is we don't eat gebrach. And I was assuming that we were not gonna be eating gebrach, and we're not gonna be bruching, as they say. We're not gonna be eating gebrach for my new married family either. Generally, the wife takes on the husband's minhagim. So Rukhuli said, no, you're not. You're not doing that there. You will not force her to take on gebrach as well. You guys will be eating gebrach this Pesach. So I was like, okay, taken aback, surprised, but she was not going to get
married.
Like
right,
doesn't work that way. When she's married, I got it. Yeah, but then Rukhuli said, this like really shocked me. Rukhuli said, and if you want, we could talk about kiddush too. Meaning, if I wanted, we could have that conversation about me, I guess, being matzah neder, or just not holding the minhag of kiddush anymore. So that, I was like, no, I can't do that, it's too much, and like, I don't know, kind of like this.
But how was that conversation?
Displacement.
Well, I'm just saying that she, like, your wife can go to her brush, but you can go to kiddush.
To be so mocking on her, to say that she can't eat kimyos anymore, and not eat the grass is like, that's ridiculous, you can't do that there. But for me, to get more kulos, like, that's fantastic, wow, why not kulos? That seems to be, I decided not to have that conversation. It would be too jarring for me as an Ashkenazi, card-carrying Ashkenazi, to start eating kimyos and Pesach. I was like, well, in prison, I don't even know, maybe he meant it's only for that one Pesach, not as a general thing. I said, like, that's too much, and we didn't have that conversation, but it was funny that he brought it up, it was funny that he suggested it. And for me, that kind of just highlights the same sensitivity, especially when you talk about Menhagim, and for Willis, which is a big clown, and like their stack in general, you always need to be aware of like the personal, the social, how other people, those factors, how other people are going to be relating to the stack that he's giving. That's always something which is on his mind. How's she going to feel about this? How's this God? Obviously, you need to know the halachos also. But that's a factor that he gives very, very strong weight to, and I always appreciate that. So, that was about Menhagim. So if you weigh three, if your family's from like a German background or a Yeki, any sort of Yeki background, then you have what to rely on. Don't feel self-conscious. They have a pretty strong Masorah for that. There doesn't seem to be much reason to switch if you want to. There is the Marashal has that language of anybody who has Re'ah HaTorah weighs 6 hours. So if you want to have Re'ah HaTorah, weighs 6, that's pretty cool. It's like a nice title, I guess, to have. But if you hold 5 of it, you want to like up your chumras a little bit. It's not the first thing on your list. If like you're not getting to davening on time, that's probably more important. But if you do everything else perfectly and you're looking for an extra chumra, it's kind of up your religious status in God's eyes in the video game, then this could be a nice way to get you up to like Hebrew level. 5.1 to 6. A couple of other things just to finish off last simon. Separations, we were talking about general separations between meat and dairy. Waiting is obviously a big one. Waiting amounts of time. Practically, you should also have, I think Isaac asked about this last week, 2 weeks ago, you should have separate tablecloths for meat and dairy. Very practical. If you're taking from the serving dish, you can probably things fall, things drip, you get shuman, you get leftovers on the tablecloth. So you want to make sure that you're switching the tablecloths. The Pitzte Tshuva speaks up. And says, that used to maybe true now, it's like back then, but nowadays we have this cool invention called plates, and plates hold all of our food. So maybe we don't need to be as concerned, but he says that just in terms of like reality, you do see things drip off the plates, things are still around, so you, instead of having to switch the tablecloths, you could get away with just wiping down the tablecloths in the area that you have food, and obviously changing the plates. Good to have tablecloths, still good to have different plates. Good to have different tablecloths, good to have placemats. If you don't, you can get away with just wiping down the tablecloths, though, because we assume most of the food is going to be on your plate. Keep it.
What about the
tablecloths
or
works. Definitely for leftovers. Probably works for Schumann. If it's like really thin, then you may have a problem. If it's basically thick enough that things like oil will not be able to get through the other side, I assume it's fine. And throwing it in the washing machine would take care of any problems.
What about like a tablecloth that
doesn't work
with
it? But
they're
like cloth. I don't know what they do with oil. The oil just like stays on top. Yeah, it works.
I thought the deal wasn't even
spread away. Is it?
Even
needed. What do
you mean, not needed? You could have your plate on the table itself.
You could, but then you're going to have problems. If you have like leftovers, oil drips from your chicken that you're eating, and then a few hours later, you're eating pizza and sauce drips or something, and you wipe it up. Now you have chicken grease on your pizza. That's going to be a problem.
It's
a very practical issue.
The issue is you might drop something.
Exactly.
Yeah, but there's no actual concern.
Since there is that concern, we try to avoid it by having different tablecloths, different placemats, things like that, wiping down the area. Wiping down the area would take care of it probably, as long as you're being on a plate. So it's a very practical, like, just make sure you don't have stuff, and we want to avoid practical issues, so have the tablecloths. Yeah.
You put a pot down onto, but you still have dairy on the tablecloth. And everyone shares the dairy. Is that an issue?
You have the dairy food, you have like actual food there?
Is it cheese? Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The pot is hot,
yeah. Yeah. So there are a couple of things. So there's...
What's something else you have to take
it does get complicated. You need a couple of things for taste to transfer. You need heat in order for taste to transfer, or pressure. That's like a whole nice discussion to talk about. And you also need a liquid medium. Generally, in order for taste to transfer, you need some sort of liquid medium. If you just have, like, let's say, two hot pots that you're cooking on a burner together, one meat and one dairy, they just bump each other, Maybe I didn't. Taste is not transfer because we assume that there's no liquid medium to allow that taste to go from one to the other. So it would, I guess it would depend on what exactly the food is that's down there, that's on the table. If it's totally dry and put down in a hot pot, I wouldn't be comfortable. You'd have to ask somebody. I'd have to double check and get back to you. Definitely if there's some liquid on there, then you're going to have a problem with the pot. But the food itself is probably going to be okay based on the shishin, because the shishin is also a topic we're going to discuss. The small amounts of food from one type falls into a large amount of food, 60 times the volume of the first food, then the soup taste is insignificant. It's bapel, and then it does trace up the food. The pot, we're going to have to see if you have the kasher or the pot. That's fine. That's, I'm going to have to look into it today. Yeah, exactly. It's definitely encouraged, especially the indigo one, like the white down,
It's more just
the
calling
ball
on the table that is trained.
If it was hot, depends if it was hot or cold, depends on if the table is actually green or not. Try to avoid the problems by having a tablecloth, by having a tray. EL
is the food tray.
Okay. You should have something when you bring your own food. You should try to have something to put down. Good point.
What about the
That's fine. As long as you have two like distinct areas for where like the meat should be, and there's no like bully up in the table cloth, that should be fine.
Okay.
Pork fall on the table and the kitchen and the table.
Just like that. I mean, it's like you actually drop it into the table and you pick it up again, just wipe it off. Wipe it off with your shirt, with a napkin, with anything in your hand.
Even if it's
hot? Yes, that can be happening. So you can just wipe it off and you should be okay. There is a problem with shamunis. It's like that grease or oil which may fall on the table, and like a quick wipe down usually won't get rid of shamunis. That's what you're trying to do. So wiping it off with your shirt, with a napkin, with anything would get rid of the shamunis, but we don't assume that there's a bulia in the fork just because it fell on the table. You see that difference? Shamunis is like a little bit of oil as opposed to a bulia in that fork. The way to get a bulia out is by hagala, which we'll talk about towards the end of the series. All right. Any more questions? Cool. Can we perform? Like, we actually do hagala and all that stuff? We'll have to do it. Maybe if we enter on Pesach time, we can go on a field trip. In Israel, they set up like these huge hagala stations.
So cool.
You bring all your stuff. Yeah, it's great. So maybe if we finish on Pesach time, we can do a hagala field trip. But they have a Shabbos cover. We're talking about like, going to the Shabbos farm. We're getting all these field trips. Cool. Okay. So that is, a couple more things. You need if you have food, like communal food, if you have a salad bowl, if you have a bread plate that was on the table during, let's say, a fleshic meal, you use that, what is the status? So what is the status of those foods? So Moshe Feinstein has an idea, I guess you'd call it Kiddush, that says that bread which was on, let's say, a cutting board, or salad which is in a serving bowl, is generally not interacting with people's plates where there's actual meat or dairy is. Now usually people take with a salad tongs, they drop it onto the plate, but the tongs are not getting meaty or dairy, and they're just going right back into the bowl, so everything stays parved. So it says anything in those separate like serving dishes remains parved, and you can bring them out for a meal of the different of the other type. If you see that you have this, I don't know, you have a guest who's not so careful, or somebody who's not so careful, and you see the tongs touching the person's plate, then you have to assume there is now residue, either the meat or the dairy on the tongs, and that made the salad, meaty or dairy, but you don't necessarily have to assume unless you actually saw that happen. Yeah.
So, it was hot there, when you use the tongs for everything.
Yeah.
Do that?
For
yeah.
Salatin versus meat? So her Shechter has an interesting question about that. Eliza's literally the bucket here. I go every day. Okay, so it depends on the
table.
So it depends on the theater to figure out, go like, somebody can run a case study and just publish the results, what did they do there? This idea from about the bread and salad is your motion of the city.
So they
add the
casino last, and then after they add the
theater,
they
do that from the
no, they don't.
This would be an application of that halacha. You'd have to see if it's actually touching the meat or not, go on that. Yeldon brought up saying the oil in the same fryer, just to point out, Rav Shechter has an interesting chiddush, where he says that frying, let's say, like French fries in the same fryer, in the same oil as like a schnitzel thing, would actually not make the fries kosher, but nobody apparently agrees with Shechter. I think he says that the oil is the notion of gone. The meat is in the skin of time that's gone with the oil, and therefore it doesn't transfer over. But again, nobody agrees with that. Don't rely on it. unless you're a Shechter guy and he has a lot of interesting cheetos, don't rely on it. It seems like that's kind of his thing.
That's so cool.
Okay. So, but really, really nobody else likes
that.
So, would he go that far? I don't know if he would go that far.
It's more of a fire.
It's like shocking data. I don't know what he said. If I remember correctly, I haven't seen this disaster, but I think the Shulchan Aruch says that meat is in the town that's gone in oil. That meat makes it so that meat fried in oil doesn't taste good. I may be way off, but I think that's what I remember. And therefore, the meat is not able to give a positive taste to the oil, therefore it doesn't transfer to the fried. I don't know. You can see why that's surprising. So, just back to the whole bread and salad discussion. So, let's say if you have somebody, once the bread has been taken off the challah board and maybe put in like a communal challah tray, wherever he's taking from, the challah that's there would have the status of whatever meal you're dealing with, generally let's say plate on Shabbos, but if it's still on the cutting board and the only person touching that is the balabais, who's cutting. So, with the challah knife, that would remain hard, could be used for French toast, following Sunday, our classic move growing up, obviously you have the leftover challah becomes French toast. That's one. The salad also would be the same deal. As long as you can assume, based on what you were seeing, you don't have to be Inspector Gadget, just like be aware of what's going on. As long as the salad did not touch somebody's plate, you can assume that everything inside is fired and use it for the meal of the other type. One last thing, this one's obvious, everybody knows you should have separate sets of silverware. The Rama, this is left known, the Rama brings down that Minhag Yisrael is to mark the Milchik Kli. The Milchik Kalev used to have like a hole punched inside or some sort of way to mark the Milchik Kli. That's what they do?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so that's great Shulchan Aruch, it's great Rama. I think that's why they do it. You should mark the Milchik Kli and set those aside for the play check. They didn't really bring down why, but that's the way you should do it, if possible. Generally, I think common practice is to have two different sets, and hopefully two very clearly different sets. You can have colors, you can have shapes, something which is very obviously different types, keep them separate, just smart, and avoids a lot of problems. Anybody know Moresh Akolo? It's like the YU Kolo for the summer, so a lot of guys go. So Yagibu was in the same area. We used their dining room for 3 months. We were connected to Morasha. So we used their dining room, and for some reason, I don't know why they did this, but like they got all the colors wrong. What color is like supposed to represent Blazer?
Red.
So red somehow in Morasha Kolo is dairy. I don't know why. I don't know what happened, and I think yellow was meat. you have to learn the system. But yeah, it like really throws you off. But you should have different sets. Yeah.
What's the restaurant that had marked the dairy?
I don't know. I think they even say they're like not really clear why. I don't remember. I'm not doing that. So Exactly. Yeah.
If you call on us on the tray, then it wouldn't be touching, and you start following on touch.
Right.
So we didn't keep getting calls from back and forth. That means the board.
What do you mean back and forth?
If you put one that wasn't touching,
right,
back in the bowl was a completely part
of it. I mean, there was that transfer, everything else. The problem is like grease, and the grease might even transfer, so I don't know. Sorry, I got that from the good question. That's a good question. Okay, so that I think closes off our discussion of separations between meat and milk and the our mug discussion from before. Now we're able to get to not bar not. This is huge. Like you said, the mug question, things like that, it's all going to be relevant. So what exactly is not bar not? Not bar not is the phrase that Schopenhauer uses. It stands for no thing come. Bar, no thing time. Not, bar, not, nun pet, bar, nun pet. No thing time or no thing time. So what does that mean? It means you have basically two taste transfers before you get to whatever situation you're dealing with. So a very easy example. You have a meat pot. In the pot that you cook all your chicken soup in, you have a meat pot, and you make noodles in that pot. Those noodles, obviously noodles are part of it. You make those noodles in the pot, so what is the status of the taste that went from the pot into the noodles? So we can count it. The taste, the meat taste that went from the chicken into the walls of the pot is one taste transfer. That's a knock. That's one taste transfer. Then the taste goes from the walls of the pot into your noodles. That's the second taste transfer. That's not bar not. So the status of these noodles are not directly meat. They're two steps removed meat taste. So our question is, what is the status of meat taste, which is two steps removed? Got the question? You can come up with a million different ways to get here. Yeah, not even necessarily like within a few minutes of each other. You can have them within a day. We'll discuss these different applications. It doesn't specifically need to be meat in the afterwards. We know that there's meat taste living in the walls of this pot. Okay. You used it for meat in the past, or many
for 24 hours.
That's going to be one of the factors we talk about, yes. So I know that there's meat taste living in the walls of the pot, but there's strong meat taste, good meat taste, bad meat taste we'll talk about. And then, since I cook, let's say the noodles, eggs is another one, another part of food you can cook in the pot. Anything part of it I'm putting in this pot, which is bringing that taste out of the walls where it's living right now, so now this part of food has become a secondary infusion of meat taste. What is the status of those noodles now? Can I mix it with cheese and make lasagna? If I already mixed it, can I eat it? Can I eat it now? All these things are going to be questions we're going to talk about. So noodles in a spicy pot. The question that we said I've already gotten like 4 or 5 times, if I made a mug dairy, right? I made a mug dairy with Yeshiva's generously provided hot chocolate powder, which is great. And now I want to use it maybe at a meat meal or after a meat meal. That's going to be it's the same question. There's a dairy taste living inside the walls of the mug, and now the making tea or using it for water causes that taste to go out. Same question, eggs boiled in a dairy pot for the svardim among us, can I use that in my chamin? Yes, we have eggs in our chamin every Shabbos, it's delicious. My wife is fish, I'm too much to I'll get killed for that one. Can you eat them in a meat meal? Fried, what if I eat, like, fry eggs with salami? All these are questions we're going to deal with. Yeah?
What about
when
you're
using the oven?
What about it?
Yeah, so ovens have a little bit of a different status. They are technically Kalim, but, like, there are a lot more factors. So try to address ovens on their own.
Okay.
Good question. Okay, so let's get into it. First, I was going to mention this at the beginning, but I almost was not able to come in today. My son Yosef had an ear infection, and we almost were not able to get a babysitter, but like literally in the last minute, we got two Minbo cousin-year-olds were able to come over, came out of nowhere, so I just want to express appreciation to Minbo, those girls, my wife, putting in all the time, and Hashem for organizing all this happening. That's very cool. Okay, so what is it? Yeah.
Question
on that part?
Okay, fine.
Yeah, what do you got?
I drink this like all day.
Okay, good.
But not a meal.
Okay.
So I'm good to keep drinking water rather than like throughout the day.
So something we mentioned a few weeks ago is that you should make a practice of wiping off the top, just in general. If you're drinking from it immediately after, let's say, a meat or dairy meal, there's a solid chance there's like fat and oil left on your mouth, which is not going to be on the rim of the bottle. And then if you make it to the meal, it hasn't been washed off yet, you're going to have a problem. So best practice is just to make a practice that hand to keep his head. He's been more aware of it. You got to wipe off the rim, the spout, whatever you're drinking from. That's just good common practice. But if you haven't actually used it with hot liquid of either type, usually dairy, but sometimes chicken soup, whatever it is, if you haven't actually used the bottle itself with hot liquid of either type, then it's not going to have it. It's still fouled. It doesn't have a status of either one, even if it did have some sort of oil or something on the rim. It never actually became, it never absorbed Tom from either type, so it's still technically part of the continuing unit. Yeah.
Tom, she
used
to get oil in here now for a little
while. Well, that's like, I don't know, not really, I don't know what the amount of time is. If you lick your lips over time, I don't know, I can't give a number. Sorry. Okay, good. Okay, so the source for this whole study of not bar not really comes from one Gemara. Obviously, it's Fulin. We've been dealing with Fulin this entire time. Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara says, dugging fish are part, even though we discussed a while ago, I think, about issues with mixing fish with meat, and on the other hand, mixing fish with milk, dairy, cheese, tuna melts, all those things, Ashkenazi Sephardi, different nugget. So even though fish are technically parah, what happens if you have dugim she'alu bika'ara? Dugim she'alu bika'ara, fish were put on a meat tray. Fish that were cooked presumably in a parah pot, and then taken out of the pot, they were so hot, and put on a meat tray. What is the status of those fish? Can I eat them with something called kutach? Anybody familiar with kutach? Kutach ha'babli is a Babylonian milk dip. I think my first encounter with it was in Gemara and Stuffing, because one of the ingredients was some sort of like sourdough hummus thing. I think it's like some soury milk, like almost spoiled or actually spoiled milk, and they use it as dips. I like hummus in my bufa much better. This kutach thing does not sound like something that I particularly enjoy, but all we need to know for our purposes is that it's a milky dip. And you want to know, are these fish considered meat or not? If because of the meat tray, they're going to be considered meat, and not be able to eat them with a dairy dip. But if they're considered still parah, then you'd be totally fine.
When you mentioned that we talked about mixing fish and dairy and fish and meat. Wouldn't it be a clear sign of perfectly clear bar that it's fine to eat fish and dairy together?
This is fish and meat.
Are you
saying
if there's a question about the fish, it would obviously be okay. That's a great point.
I don't remember if anybody brings it up, though. I don't remember if anybody brings it up. Sorry. I know people just have talked about, doesn't this show you that there's no problem of mixing fish and meat? And fish and meat is one that we actually are knowing. We are careful about whether you're Ashkenazi or Sephardi. You are meant to keep fish and meat separated. So the Taz says, doesn't this show that it's actually fine? So he says, no, there's a difference between actually cooking them together and bleeding. And then the absorbing Taz is not the same as cooking. But that's a good point about the dairy. I'm not sure what to say.
On this topic of mixing meat and fish, when it comes to mixing chicken and fish for meat as a mockery, because chicken falls under the meat category, possibly it shouldn't.
So unless the takana more within their abanon, means the soul is higher than a takana. I think we are as careful about it. I think so. So what is the deal with these fish? Can I eat them with a dairy dip or not? So it's machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says it's aser, and he explains no same time is it's considered just like meat itself. So the fish absorb the meat taste from the meat platter, from the meat tray, and now those fish are considered meat just like steak, just like a hamburger. It's straight up meat. Shmuel says, no, what are you talking about? This is not a case of no sin tam. This is a case of not bar not. This is a case of no sin tam, bar no sin tam, and therefore no problem. And by it says, the end of Gemara says we pass him like Shmuel, even though generally we have machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, this is good to know. Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, who we pass him like? It depends. It depends on what area of halacha we're talking about. We pass them like Rav, Bishis, Bisuri. We pass them like Rav, who actually has Misa, in cases of Isser Beheter, which this should have fallen under, this is an exception. We generally pass them like Shmuel, Zini Mamnus. Zini Mamnus, we pass them like Shmuel, but this is clearly not Mamnus, this is Isser Beheter, but Abaye says in this example, in this case, we'll pass them like Shmuel. So, question you have to ask yourself is, why should not bar not matter? Why should I care that it's two steps removed instead of one step removed? What's the svara there? Why would Shmuel say that? Because it's two steps removed, suddenly it's okay. We have some, any thoughts? Why would that make it okay? Why would that make it fine? Why is...
Because everything's on the bigger of not cooking or not eating it.
If the actual problem was like all the way over here, cooking, full fledged, kosher beans, kosher dairy, all together, like it just takes so many steps to finally get to the point of now I'm two steps removed. I have a two taste transfer before it's actually being mixed with dairy. That's like, that's just way too far. Okay, interesting suggestion. I don't think anybody brings that down there. But in terms of the mitzvah of what is the status of the meat taste, these are two possible svaras, you might say. It's definitely a suggestion. Two possible stars. What happens to the meat taste, the meat town, when it gets absorbed into the walls of the cleats?
It's chamash.
Okay, so one thing to say is that it's very, very weak. It's still there. If you were like an expert taste tester, you would be able to detect some elements of a meat taste, but it's very, very weak, called tam kalosh. Another thing you might say is, no, there's a limited shelf life to meat taste. It can go from the meat itself into the cleat, but it's not strong enough to get out of the kli into whatever food you cook in there. So actually, there would be no meat taste. If it's not bar none, that means that there is no meat taste in the noodles in our example, because it just can't transfer so far. Two possible sources, either it's a weak taste or that there's no taste. Yeah?
Would this like apply to the kind of an organization day?
We'll talk about nine again, it's on Sugya, and Sugya also called the Summer Shabbat. So we got a lot to talk about. Baruch Hashem, there's a lot of material here, a whole year's worth for you to send this right there.
Like, what's the showing
cup
that we
can
use, which isn't used for 24 hours, like there's like 7 days a week,
yeah.
And then, the ongoing cup that we make, that traveling has been used for 24 hours.
Okay.
So we'll
cover Davar Faris as its own topic, but just the points where it's relevant here. Number one, Davar Faris negates in a Yoma. So even if something hasn't been used for 24 hours, which is generally your best bet in saving whatever food that you just made, whatever mistake you just made, onions and other Harif foods, ginger and radishes, I think. So there, lemon maybe on there. A few examples. Other sharp foods would negate that heather, and we'd have to deal with it as if it was ben yomo. That's number one. Number two, it also negates not. So when you throw an onion into the mix, literally, you lose the heather, you lose the advantage of not by not and in a ben yomo, and you're left with a lot of problems and a lot of confused rabbis. So we'll try to deal with that as kind of its own topic, but what specifically were you asking there?
Shouldn't you tell people they're facing that if there's no meaning to
the pot is placed, but it's in a miyomo, but there's onions in there, so we don't care about the miyomo. The only thing I might say is that maybe Tom, the meat Tom is muscle, but we usually assume that you can't even laugh out the taste in the side of the pot. So yeah, so we'll go to talk about cooking onions. We'll ask him again when we get to the higher. We have to choose one of them. We had two possible svaras. Svara number one is that Tom does not transfer that far. There's no Tom from the food in the second thing, in the second. Once you get to the noodles, there's no Tom of meat from, let's say, your chicken soup, in our chicken soup pot example. Or there is Tom, but it's very, very weak. It is so weak that it's not able to mix with subsequent dairy to create basar b'chalav. So which ones we hold like? It's very important, the Ron says, we hold like the Tom Kolish idea. There is still taste, but it's very weak. Why do we care? What's the nachimina? So let's say that we're not dealing with the taste of meat, but instead we're dealing with the taste of ham. You're at an Airbnb, and you check the guy's fridge, and he has ham in his fridge. I don't even know what that would look like. He cooks bacon for breakfast. Is that the thing? Why are we not able to do like salami for breakfast, but it's so normal, they can have bacon? So it's not worth it. I hear that. That's a great smart answer. Well, okay, so for the coffee and hot dog people, that's taka probably the truth. Yeah, that's probably what it is. Okay, so the guy, you don't have to care about being placed for 6 hours, they can have their coffee, they eat bacon. So you know that he has bacon in his fridge, but you're at the Airbnb, can I use his pot So that's not a good example. You have a lot of other issues to deal with than an Airbnb. Maybe it's not good. Some of your housekeeper accidentally cooked her bacon sandwich because she cooked it in your pot at home. Now you know that bacon can cook in this pot, but you know all about that. You say, wait a minute, I can cook noodles in that pot. It'll be not bar not. There's only two steps. It's a two steps removed from the bacon itself, and I can eat those noodles with cheese, without cheese. It doesn't matter if it's not bar not. Isn't that totally fine? So the Ron says, not okay. Why is it not okay? Based on the second reading, since it's a Tom Kolosh, once it starts out as usher, it doesn't matter how weak it is, it's always usher. There is still a taste of bacon in those noodles, just a very weak taste of bacon. Are we allowed to have weak taste of bacon? No, we're not. So what we're dealing with, either basar or halav, two steps removed, it weakens the taste, and therefore when it's mixed with meat or mixed with dairy, mixed with the other type, it's not strong enough to create a problem. It just negates itself, it's not strong enough to create a problem. And there's no issue, so that's why, if it gets mixed, you have no issue. But when you're dealing with a tam iser is usser the whole time, from where it started. So it doesn't matter how many steps removed you get. You can have a not, bar not, bar not, bar not. You can have four or five steps removed, but that tam iser remains the entire time. That's an important not for me, just in terms of understanding. What do you gain with two-step transfer? It's not that the taste does not transfer at all. The taste is still there. It's just very weak. And once you appreciate that it's there, it's just very weak. That's why none of this applies to Tom Isser. This is only for Tom Hedder before it got mixed up with taste of the other time. Yeah.
The
same for
dairy?
Yeah, everything we're saying is true.
Only part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Eat milk alone or meat alone. That the heter of not bar not is only for milk alone or meat alone. Okay. Where you're dealing with the tam heter, which could get mixed up with something else to become other.
I mean, chicken soup in this pot, and now I'm
exactly.
Not
enough. Okay. Yeah. So you want to know, can I mix the cheese with the noodles? Right. That's what we're going to discuss. That we'll have to get there next week. That's going to be a machlokas, really important. And lemaisa machlokas between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. I'll tell you just the highlights right now. The Ashkenazim say it's maser, and the Sephardim say that it's muter. Yeah. Big cool.
Not so.
Oh, you're saying to the Paris stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wouldn't what the last step be considered a B2 canceling it? Because
with which phase?
With any milk, because now you said, well, if it's giving a taste, then it's really cooking meat and meat together.
Great question. Is it actually Bissell Isser, though? I mean, it's not actually us, it's heavy. Presumably, Bissell Isser is only when you have something that's usher, and now you're canceling it out in the mixer. It's not usher yet.
But it's cooking meat and meat together.
No. Since we're calling it a tam kolosh, we assume that they are mixing, but like the mixing is not at all significant. You're not really being the vatel of tape, which is there.
There's a little bit of butter on my tape. That's kind of what it sounds like. Just a very little bit. And I'm not supposed to cover the whole piece of tape, just a little bit. That's kind of what it sounds like.
There's a qualitative, not just a quantitative difference, there's a qualitative difference in the dairy that we're dealing with. There where it's full-fledged dairy, any amount is going to become a problem.
It's not real dairy, it's just taste.
This, right, it's qualitatively weaker. It's not just like a smaller amount, but it's qualitatively weaker. I think that's what makes the difference here. Mm-hmm. Got it?
Good. Question.
Are
you usually warm out there in terms of packages, though?
For specific areas, there are some significant groups.
Yeah, you have the noodles that are cooking in a pot.
Yeah.
Can you then put it on the same plate as noodles that are cooked in a dairy pot?
And just eat noodles, straight noodles?
Like,
you're not putting anything on
it?
You're not putting anything on it, just the noodles.
But what's on a dairy pot?
Yeah, that I think is totally fine.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to have to deal, we're out of time, unfortunately. We're going to have to deal with a lot more of the discussion and then all the practical nachminas next week. Sorry for the tease, but at least we have the background, and we'll be able to get the meat and potatoes, meat and cheese, next week. So, yeah.